You're listening to Action Magazine, the podcast, the weekly download on what's shaping in the future of film, festivals, and the creative voices behind entertainment. I'm your host, Victoria, filmmaker, documentarist, and editor-in-chief of Action Magazine. From solo insights to on-the-ground festival coverage and stories from across the creative world, this podcast keeps you in action. Welcome to episode 4 of Action Magazine, the podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be talking to Andre Joseph, director of new independent action film, The Last Vendetta. Let's get into it.
Hi.
Hi, Victoria. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
Thank you so much for doing this interview and for reaching out. And my name is Victoria. I'm the editor-in-chief of Action Magazine. And our magazine tries to give voice to emerging filmmakers and also help young students and people that are stepping in the industry kind of learn the reality of the film industry and the creative field. So that's our goal, to really bring interesting conversations and kind of enlighten them and all of that. So thank you so much for reaching us out. And I've watched your film and I'd love to talk about, I have a few questions. First of all, I wanted to ask you to tell a little bit about yourself, about your journey in the film industry.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I've been 18 years in deep. It's quite a ride that's been going. Feels like yesterday when I started, you know, because for me, it was just growing up, taking my toys, reenacting everything that I saw on television, or if my parents took me to see a Disney movie, I want to get the figures and try to play with those and play up what I saw. And when I got a little bit older, you know, I used to go to my grandmother's apartment in Brooklyn, and some of my other cousins would stay over, and we were always sort of doing sort of the same stuff. We're playing charades, we were reenacting stuff on TV, and my uncle had just gotten a video camera and we wanted to borrow it to try to film some of the skits. Of course, I was 10, so he didn't trust us to use it, though we were going to break it. But we were always writing different ideas, and then on a summer vacation, my mom had just gotten a camera, and we made some friends on our hotel. So we said, hey, can we use the camera to shoot this little murder mystery story? So she said, okay, sure. And that was kind of the beginning of it. You know, then it was like getting my friends together every couple of weekends to do short films. From there, I said, listen, this is what I want to do. And I went to New York Film Academy for a summer program. Then after high school, I went to Emerson College up in Boston. So now I got to learn how to really work with a crew on a student film. Yeah. And then pretty much I got my career started from there and started making features, shorts, music videos, and cutting my teeth all through the process.
Wow, that's wonderful. I also studied film, and I know how hard it is after you graduate to step into industry, but it's such a lovely career field that it's amazing to be with like-minded people, and you kind of find your own little group and do your passion projects. It's amazing. Can you talk a little bit about the film, what it's all about, introduce us to the story?
So The Last Vendetta is the third in a trilogy that we started back in 2009. It started with a movie called Dishonorable Vendetta, and then a few years later, we did the sequel, Vendetta Games. You can find both on Amazon and on Tubi. So it revolves around the lives of these two drug enforcement agents, Keith Miller and Jason Stokes. And Stokes is the family man that's always kind of had a nice balance between family and work. Miller is the one with the troubled past because his wife was murdered because of a job that they were working on. And he had tried to get revenge against the people that were responsible. And nobody ever knew that he was the one that had a hand in his killers being assassinated by their competitors. So this is something that's been eating away at him for so many years. And we see over the course of the initial films how those tensions kind of grow and rift, and things that would happen on different assignments that would come back and have personal effects, particularly on Miller.
Yeah.
But here, we're sort of in the rite of passage aspect of the story, where my character Stokes is looking to possibly retire, and, you know, he's got a kid on the way. He wants to maybe settle down a bit. Our boss, played by J.R. Carter, he's about to be confirmed as the new drug czar of the country. So Miller is kind of feeling, you know, a little stuck, doesn't know where he's going with his life. And then things kind of collide when our boss ends up going missing. And it happens at the same time as this assassin that's supposedly a contractor for the CIA.
Yeah.
He's targeting us. And when he's caught by the feds, he reveals some information that creates an even greater rift between these partners, and they're both forced to kind of grow up without their boss, and things kind of collide here and there where they start to confront some things that have been very deep for a long time.
Wonderful. And what are some challenges of creating like a sequel, like a story that has a sequel or a trilogy or things like that? What are some of the challenges story-wise or technical challenges that you face to keep like engaging or create a sequence to the story in those terms?
That's a great question. You know, we always kind of had the sense that this was not going to be like a one-act tale. This was going to be a three-parter. But given the realities of making independent films and you don't have a major studio or the marketing, you have to always have to refamiliarize the audience to those previous films. And that requires me sometimes to have to not only just rely on flashbacks, and that's another subtle way of trying to market the other films, say, hey, we got this other stuff that went on, you can check out. But also to make sure that the story itself is standalone, that it's not always required that you have to see the first two films to understand exactly what's happening. I take great inspiration from like what George Miller did with the Mad Max movies, where every story feels isolated. And yes, there's one whole arc with the character of Mad Max, but you could take each one individually and say they have a different tone, a different feel, and they can be enjoyed as individual movies. So that's what we tried to do here, which was throw everything in, including the kitchen sink, and still tell something that was cohesive. So these characters still had an arc from where they began from the start of the movie all the way to where they ultimately evolved by the end of it.
Yeah, and wasn't difficult to keep, did you guys keep the same crew, the same actors? Was that a difficult to have everyone on board for a sequence of films?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of it when it came to the actors, we were fortunate with myself, JR, and Chris that we were all pretty much on board with doing follow-ups. Of course, the actress who plays my wife from the second movie, she actually replaced the original actress from Dishonorable Vendetta, but we were fortunate to bring her back to keep it cohesive. And, you know, you see some other faces here and there, and then there were other actors for whatever reason, scheduling issues and whatnot, they weren't able to return, or we just felt creatively that we wanted to kind of shift direction. As far as crew, you know, that's always a tricky part because people move away or they change their priorities or sometimes money may be a factor. But I would say by far, and this is no disrespect to the guys that worked on the first two films, but, you know, aside from my longtime assistant director, Albert, who was there on the first movie and comes back here, I think this is one of the best crews we ever worked with because everybody wanted to learn. They were on their A game. They never made money an issue. They just wanted to do their best work. And it was just a nice, fruitful collaboration of guys that were willing to bring a lot of tools to the table, especially my cinematographer, Demetrios. I would tell him, like, this interrogation room scene, for example, like, we used to do it where just, like, the overhead light looking down and just make it very film noiric.
Yeah.
He goes in, he makes it look like an MTV video, and it was just, like, I didn't expect that, but I love it because
yeah.
That's the stuff I kind of grew up watching. And so that kind of added an ambiance that I always pictured in my head, but just never knew how to pull it off on the set.
Exactly. And a lot of you, including yourself, took on many roles in the film, including acting. Can you talk a little bit about that choice and some of the difficulties of taking multiple roles?
Yeah, you know, when I did the first one, I had originally written myself to play the Miller character, but I felt I wanted to take just a little bit of a step back, play the partner, because I like playing the idea of a family man, let my actor Chris kind of carry the workload. But, you know, the thing that happened just from a natural evolution as we wrote the scripts for the sequels was that there was room for Stokes as a character to grow and for him to be like the loyal partner to kind of what ends up happening in this movie where his partner's kind of gone a little bit rogue, his boss has gone missing. So he's forced to step up and sort of take a leadership role when nobody else knows what to do. And that was a challenging thing to have to direct myself in scenes and to work with my crew. I think what was fortunate was two things, that Demetrios, he had two external monitors that I could always look back at and I could view my performance and see what I needed to adjust. And of course, my AD, as I mentioned, Albert, was always watching my back because we had some pretty extensive action scenes in there, like one scene where one of the villains I have to chase around these parked buses. And obviously, I had it mapped out where I was going to block it, but I wouldn't know exactly where the camera was going to get my angles correct. So Albert was very good just seeing the other films, knowing kind of what my style is and what I like to go for. And so he was always like watching. We were shooting with two cameras, by the way, at the same time. So he kind of knew where the crew needed to be at a place, or if a certain actor needed to come in at the right time. He was able to motion all that, and that actually made the process a lot smoother for me.
That's amazing. And this is called The Last Vendetta. Is it the last one, or are you guys planning on creating more on the same universe?
So I always tell people that if this one takes off and the money is right, nothing's off the table. I mean, I would definitely have higher ambitions if we did a fourth. But one thing I've always thought about doing, and I'm actually seriously considering now with today's technology, is to maybe go to animated route and do like a web series where we could fill in the gaps of what happened between the other films and even stuff that happened before the first one, and maybe bring some of the actors back to do their voices. That's still in early stages, though. Like, we'd have to figure out that whole process, how it would work. But that's something I always had the idea and ambition to do, just to kind of flesh it out even more and, you know, not have to require us have to go through all the stunts again.
Exactly. And this is a very action-packed movie, and I think a lot of independent filmmakers are scared of doing actual films because of the challenges of creating those scenes. Can you talk a little bit about the technical considerations that you took while doing an action filming and doing those scenes?
Well, one thing that was definitely true when we started shooting, you know, when it came to actors that have worked with me in the past, they knew my style, so they knew I would keep them safe. But there were a lot of new people we worked with. And, you know, of course, right away, they would ask, are the guns going to be real? Are they going to be playing someone? So I always made sure that Chris's father, who's retired NYPD, he's a professional armorer for film. So anytime we had guns on set, he was always there to check them out, make sure they were taken away from the actor in between shots. And we always use air pistols. We never use blanks. And everything else was done in post-production, including our explosion shots, which you see in the trailer. All of that was done in post because we wanted to keep everybody as safe as possible and never feel nervous on the set. And that's also the beauty of when it came to the fight scenes. Mako-san, who plays the villain Jeremiah, you know, he worked with me on a G.I. Joe fan film I did a few years ago. And I said after I worked with him, you got to play this character because I think this is totally up your alley. So not only did he relish in it, but he was so good with choreographing basically 99% of the entire action scenes in the film. So he worked with the girls, he worked with me, he worked with Chris. And that was always the thing, too. Like, even the last day of shooting, when we had to do the big finale, I left it to him when it came to getting the angles right and making sure when they filmed that they would do last minute rehearsals, make sure like the floor was completely dusted off with no glass, no sharp objects. So he was very good with safety padding and keeping everybody safe as they're shooting, but also choreographing it like a dance and making it user friendly for everyone that even if he never had martial arts school or practicing before, he made it easy for us to kind of understand how to get the movements right just by simple blocking.
Yeah, exactly. That's wonderful. And what do you hope people will take away from the film and the story?
I hope they take away from it a lot of things. I mean, there are some political heavy messages in it. I think there's a lot that could be said about having to confront your demons before you can move on in life, especially with the Miller character, who's always had things eating away that's kind of stunted his growth as a human being. So having to face that head on is something that I think a lot of us tend to do when we're having to face these sort of trials and tribulations of our lives. And also, I think there are moments where, We're not going to have our parents forever. We're not going to have some teacher to lean on to help us when we need that extra advice. Sometimes we got to stand on our own 2 feet and take initiative. And that's what happens with Stokes. He becomes a guy that has to really grow up in this film and take initiative. So there's a lot of those things that are going on there on the could like the subtext front. But yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is just we want to entertain people at the end of the day. And we also want to make sure it was very diverse and that people were portrayed as they are, not by checking boxes, but just simply being compelling characters with a lot to say and a lot of substance.
Exactly. Yeah, that's very important for people to connect as well with characters and the arc as well. What advice would you give to young filmmakers who want to make action films, independent action films? What are some advice that you would give them?
Well, safety is the number one concern if you're going to do action. You got to make sure you are fully prepared before you do a single frame. There are really good martial arts trainers or even people in the stunt community. You can find them at film festivals like the Urban Action Showcase and network with them. They're looking to get on sets, and they could be an invaluable asset to ensuring that your sequences are done to the level of a studio picture, but at the same time, making sure that for those actors that they can work safely and not feel like they're ever going to get hurt on the set. And have your permits, of course, because things happen, whether you're indoors, outdoors, you want to make sure you're cooperating with the authorities and anybody else when you're having to do hazardous situations in a film.
Exactly, yeah, that's very important. And what's next for you and as a filmmaker?
I got so much, but I'll kind of narrow it down to a few things I'm looking to do. So, in October, I'm hoping to re-release a short film that I did called Dismissal Time, which is loosely based on a bullying incident I went through when I was in high school. And it's been making rounds in festivals since 2022. It's been getting a
Wow.
very emotional response. And my hope is that I could tour this in schools. And the first thing I'm going to try to do is to make it public on YouTube or potentially another platform so people can see it. I also wrapped a Christmas-themed film called Brooklyn Lights. It's a romantic drama. I won't give too much away about that, but it's another personal film that I did that I'm going to try to put out by Christmas time. And the last thing is we have a Western called American Gunslingers, which we're hoping to do this year. But as we speak, we're still working out the script, the financing, and trying to maybe shoot in Georgia sometime next year. So hopefully, fingers crossed, a couple of things will come together that we can make that happen pretty soon.
That's wonderful. I mean, Christmas movies are always welcome. Everybody loves them in Westerns. It's always a loving genre as well. That's wonderful. And the film is going to release soon. Can you talk to us a little bit where we can watch it and how can we follow the film on social media if there's any specific page or website that we can stay updated to all of that?
Absolutely. So on August 29th, the film will come out on Amazon Prime Video. And it's also going to be on video on demand for like if you have Verizon Fios or Spectrum here in the US and in the UK, you'll be able to rent or buy it through video on demand. Then on September 12th, it'll be on Tubi and Plex on Demand. It'll be on a couple of other streaming platforms. Special thanks to Buffalo 8 for making that happen. We also have a release party for anybody that's interested on September 6th at Solas NYC. You could go to the Eventbrite page we have to buy your tickets now for that. And as far as social media, we are on Facebook, Instagram, and on TikTok. If you just type in The Last Vendetta, it'll pop up. You'll see me and Chris from the poster. And that's where you can follow us and, like and share our trailer. It helps us with getting this reach out as much as possible.
Perfect. I will make sure to share everything as well. And this interview will be on our podcast, on YouTube, and also in written form, the magazine, Substack, Instagram, all over the place. And I will keep you updated as soon as I release everything. Is there anything else that you would like to share that I might have missed?
No, I mean, I'm just thankful for the actors and the crew that worked on this. And, that this is sort of like the triumph of our entire trilogy from where we started to where we are now. And yeah, I mean, I'm very excited to see the audience response once it's out there in the public.
That's wonderful. And how did you hear about Action Magazine?
So I was looking through a Google search initially for any action-oriented magazine publications and podcasts, and yours came up because it was called Action. But then I saw that you do like a very broad spectrum of films, and I saw the thing you did at Cannes, and obviously you have a passion for this. So I always love talking to people that share that same passion like I do for this business. And I even saw your reel, which is also very impressive too, your martial arts documentary and
Yes,
seeing
thank you.
stuff that you did too.
Thank you. Yeah, I went to Cannes this year, Tribeca, and I'm going to Toronto Film Festival, TIFF, for the first time. We're going to cover the event. So it's always exciting to meet emerging filmmakers and independent filmmakers that bring such real stories and really quality stories, because we're missing out on big budget movies nowadays. I mean, they're just making films, or they're not paying attention to character development and all that. That's why I like to talk to independent filmmakers, because they really bring that passion still to the story, and I just love spreading that out. And that's the goal of our magazine as well. We talk about big movies, but we like to give emphasis to independent filmmakers.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much again.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks for listening to Action Magazine, the podcast. Keep creating, keep dreaming, and stay in action. Catch you next week.